Welcome, everybody. This is BMP Weekly, episode 117. In the BMP Weekly, we talk about the latest in Microsoft 365 platform or in general. My name is Sasso Ivonen. I'm a program manager in a bunch of SharePoint sites, well, obviously expanding on many, many of the other technologies in Microsoft 365 as well. And with me as a co-host is Waldek. Who are you?
Hi, everybody. My name is Waldek Mosdikas. I am cloud developer advocate for Microsoft 365. And today with us, we have a guest from Belgium. Bert Janssen.
A guest from Belgium, yeah.
So, Muscle from Brussels. Muscles.
Muscle from Brussels. There we go.
Well, actually, pretty far from Brussels. I'm almost in the Netherlands, close to you all. Yeah,
but muscles, still. Muscles, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Good. So, but yeah, I'm also at Microsoft, senior service engineer in a team called Customer engineering team, and the team does many things, but one of the things that I particularly focus on is helping ISVs and partners, but mainly ISVs, get the most out of the SharePoint or OneDrive experience. We work with we get like typical questions, like an ISV has a particular integration, they want to improve a scenario which and involve SharePoint, or there's a new ISV that has a connection with Box, for example, and now their customers are asking, like, hey, ISV, can you do something similar with SharePoint? Because we need that. We use SharePoint, and we want you to do something similar. Then we help those ISVs. We start talking to them. We give them ideas, code snippets, samples. We're not writing their code as such, but we are more coaching them, helping them understand what are the best options, how to integrate with SharePoint and OneDrive. And that's like a substantial part of my job, and the other part is working with you guys on BNP.
Excellent.
We? What? Where?
So I guess this is actually... when you talk to customers, like, do you engage more with devs, or is it more with the architects, BDMs, CIOs, CTOs?
It's a mixed audience. Sometimes it starts indeed with business decision makers, CTOs, but then the actual work mainly is with the dev guys that then talk about technical things. Typically, they also have like experienced people. They have an idea about what they want. They even have tried things out. They have questions: should use option A or should use option B? And then it quite often ends up in a technical discussion around what's the best approach, how to do this and how to do that. And so, but yeah, and sometimes you talk to a CTO or a architect. It also depends on the size of the company, obviously. Like the bigger the company, the smaller the company, the easier you talk to a CTO.
Yeah, for sure. Now, actually, let's drill on you on this one. So, why would an ISV or partner be interested on Microsoft 365? What is it? What's in it for them?
I think what you see is that Microsoft and SharePoint in general is more and more evolving towards like an intelligent file storage platform as well. Like we see many ISVs that use us to handle files, and more will come in the future. And we have already a ton of features around handling files in SharePoint, around compliance, for example, security, scale, co-authoring with Office, and so on. And that's an incredible valuable asset. If you today are an ISV and you work with files and you're not in a cloud platform, where do you go? Do you build your own cloud? Do you store your own files? Yeah, you could do that, sure. But think in the global world. Okay, I build something, I put something in a data center somewhere. Okay, fine. But then your next customer is across the other side of the world. So you need to have some, or you have a multinational company which is across the world. You need to think about multi-geo, and then you get into particular security regulations, you need to implement those, and so on. So soon it becomes like a massive, complex endeavor to really handle files in the correct enterprise scale level in the cloud. And why not just give them to Microsoft, to Microsoft 365, SharePoint OneDrive, and use that as a backend to handle your files? You can still build a front-end application and use that, but we can we're actually very well capable platform of handling the backend need for you when it comes to fast. We do obviously way more than that, but that's just something that, that kind of recently had a couple of ISVs in the direction, kind of they wanted to use us as a file platform, and that's why.
Yep. And like I said, the compliance and the centralized coordination, centralized control, all of that has a massive impact.
Backup permissions, availability, everything.
So much work to build this yourself. It's like massively much work, and you shouldn't do that. It makes no sense anymore to do that yourself.
But related on this one, because I was actually in a discussion on this one for past week, but one thing what's still apparently not there is, however, that every single end user needs to have a license, right? So you cannot actually just take advantage of the platform just by the platform.
You need to have a license, yes.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But at the same time, I think 1 billion, what does that say? It's a massive number of hundreds of millions of people actually using Microsoft 365 on a monthly basis. I think it's including the consumer side, I think we're crossing 1 billion or something. It's just mind-blowing. So
the figures are just mind-blowing out of the roof. It keeps growing. And today we need maybe license, but maybe future things might be different. Maybe there's different operating models, but today, you need to have a license. But most big companies have nowadays a license, and people are using SharePoint or OneDrive, so you're good to go. So you can just, as an ISV, this also kind of makes your story easy because, well, they already have the backend. You don't have to pay for that as such. Microsoft paid already, the customer already paid for Microsoft to host that for them. Yeah. So you can piggyback on that investment. It makes your story and your investments, especially your kind of return investment, better, I think, because you don't have to host and content yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then if we talk about the scale, is Microsoft really able, what if I upload a terabyte of files to the tenant? Is the Microsoft really able to scale that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, actually, saying about the terabyte file, doesn't mean you want to upload a terabyte. In theory, you could now do that with four files of 250 gigabytes.
Ah,
just four
point.
Files.
So good point.
Just
good.
Talking about scale, that's one way to express scale. It's not about
scale.
So we scale in file size. We got the really large files nowadays, like 250 gigabyte max file size. And sizing, the amount of files, there is not really like a defined limit anymore, I think. So we're just doing our best to scratch all the limits that we had from the past. And there's,
limits
will disappear in the future, I think, meaning there's no point in a cloud. In the future cloud, there will be no limits anymore. Just usage. Just use it like electricity. You just use it and you get it. What you need, you pay.
Infinite elastic cloud, right? Yeah. So.
It reminds me of my days that I, long time ago, that like some Unix vendor, I think IBM it was, you could kind of pay usage of the Unix box, pay per use. And that was like a great idea back then. Like you just pay the bill for what you use from the Unix machine, from the CPU.
Wow.
Yeah. But that's like 20 years ago. Now we're back in a situation where you actually have a real pay by use model that scales and that works for everything.
Absolutely. Or, well, that's already way back, but at some point we were in on-premises and then we needed to figure out how do we plan our deployments in a way that the SQL Server can scale with the usage. And then we needed to actually buy the certain set of SSD disks and all of that stuff. And that was mind-blowingly hard.
Plan size, right? Because like you had limit per site, per content database.
Yeah,
you could, they couldn't
see
that. So you could you had to know all of that up front, or at least have a model to it. Like, okay, if we grow, then we will grow that way and not that way, because we need to accommodate to these limits that are on-prem.
Scale up and scale out and all of that. That is a good point.
Yeah.
Yep. That's something from the past, more or less.
Yeah.
There's also some scaling
things
to consider.
Which is a non-issue in a cloud, yeah.
Which is good. We can focus on other things.
On other things, Bert, you've been also actively part of the BMP initiative from day one, because you and me basically started collecting the samples before anything was public as an internal Microsoft effort. Thank you for being there, because we're pretty far on this journey related on where we actually started. But on there, anything new what you want to talk about, or anything new on the BMP what you've been focusing on? So I the SiteScore story? Do you want to kind of recap on that?
We can talk about SiteScore, but I think before jumping on that one, I want to kind of just talk a bit about modernization, which is one of my things that I've been working on a lot and that I'm passionate about, and that becomes more and more relevant because Microsoft keeps on shipping new things, good things, Viva Topics, Viva Connections, for example. Well, meaning great, but if you're still in the classic world, you can look at it, but you can't really use it that much. So you get more benefits if you're...
Yeah, so that's, I think, an interesting thing because migration is not just on-prem to the cloud, right? It's also from the classic experience to modern, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's something that customers are seeing, and many customers are already working on that. Good. But there's still also lots of customers still using classic UIs in SharePoint, or still today creating classic team sites and doing that because they were used to do that. Again, nothing wrong. It's supported. It works. But you missed the point on so many.
But don't do that.
But there's nothing wrong with that. Just don't do it.
Okay. That's side of
today I learned. There's nothing wrong with classic. You just don't do it.
I'm not a marketing guy, so I could have wrapped that a little bit better, but
okay.
But
we're not marketing guys either, so it's all good.
You can do that, but you have to, in the end, just spend more money to undo what you do today.
Yes.
I think that's the point. So you can do it and you can kind of push the hot potato forward, but at a certain point you have to deal with it, and then you just have to handle more classic content to transform to modern again. Now, luckily, there is some tooling. We have some NPNP. We built several modernization scripts and tools, including page transformation technology that helps you transform the classic pages into modern pages, which you need, for example, for Viva Connections. If you want to show a page on a mobile device in the Viva Connections app, well, if it's classic, it won't render. Sorry. So it needs to be modern. We have a scanner to help you assess what is classic content in your tenant and how to kind of take that one forward. So there is tools for you to make that happen. And actually, I want to quickly plug Quest in this case, because Quest last week released new version of Content Matrix, which is one of their migration products, which migrates on-prem to online. And they now integrate PNP page transformation technology as a way for customers to modernize their content while transforming from on-prem to online, which is a really great feature because I think it really adds value to the customer. For the customer, like if you're on classic on-prem, okay, it is what it is because it was classic there, you had no choice. But if you go to the cloud, why continue in a classic world? If you do the work to move over and do all the change management, to go from on-prem to online. So there's lots of things going on.
Yep.
Why not consider taking the extra jump to go to modern at the same time? Because it adds more value for you when you do like a one-time big migration versus two smaller ones.
Yep.
And now the Quest supports that technology, that approach in their product. So you can, when you have the latest content matrix, you have an option to download the PNP page transformation binaries from NuGet. You upload them to the Quest. You give them actually to the Quest tool, and then they can use it under the covers. That's kind of how it works.
And that's just a recap on that one. That's actually really good. If we think about the migration stories and cloud adoption in general, it is a really big change management project for end-user perspective. So moving from a, let's say, classic intranet.condoso.com to condoso.sharepoint.com, and all of the change behavior, the administrative behavior, the things look a bit different already, even though you would be in a classic, you would need to understand how things work. Why wouldn't you actually do the same at the modernization at the same time? Because sooner or later, you will need to do that. So it's inevitable that at some point you will need to modernize those sites. So combining
I think an interesting thing to ask is how much work is it? So to what extent does the tool everything that needs to be done to move from classic to modern? And to what extent there is still work left to be done and it's manual effort and mapping and revamp, which is why people might be hesitant to do it?
I personally think it's quite easy. So when you go from classic to modern, if you migrate content over, what's content? Content is lists and libraries, documents, and pages. That's it. Mm-hmm. If you create your target site as a modern site, a modern team site, for example, or a communication site, okay, you start modern. You move over lists and libraries. Yeah, for 95%, that all ends up in modern nowadays, so that should be good, right? One thing that doesn't end up in modern by default is pages. I have wiki pages in my site. Okay. Now, page transformation will take wiki pages and will give you like a really good, deep by default modern page. You don't have to configure anything, you just run it and you'll get like really good modern pages. There's not really much more you can improve because the things that can be translated from classic to modern are translated. If you have custom web parts, you can build, you share.
Yeah, what about the custom web parts? Yeah. What about, I have a farm solution deployed in my own premises. What now? What is the story? Can you recap on that?
First thing I would say, like, do you really need it? Ideally, you just throw it away. Forget about it. But
imagine, if it's a business critical thing in every single team side?
It is business critical. You need it. Great. No problem with that. That makes sense as well. You build a modern equivalent using SharePoint framework. You deploy the web part. And then in the page transformation technology, there's like a mapping concept, which allows you to say like this particular old web part or these old web parts, just old SharePoint web parts, I map them to this new SPFX web part. And then the mapping will handle that, and you will replace them. Your old web part will be replaced by a new web part, and you can even control the configuration. You can kind of tie things together there. So that's an option. Yeah. But for most people, they don't have custom web parts, or they don't want to move over custom web parts. But it's an option.
Cool. So that even that is being considered. That's actually really, really cool.
Yes. And for production portals, it's slightly different, but that's...
But it's doable with the publishing portals as well.
Publishing portals allowed, like in classic, a lot of freedom. You build a page layout where you define the canvas, so you put this goes to the top right, this goes to the bottom, whatever. You kind of configured that. So kind of free format. You get full control using the page layout and the master page. When you move that publishing page to a communication site, because you can only move it to a modern communication site or a modern team site to something modern, you have an option. By default, the transformation tech will just put everything like one column. Mm-hmm. All your text, all your web parts, they will be there, but they're not nicely laid out. But you can define your own custom layout there again and say like, okay, this piece of text goes to a section one, column two. This goes to a vertical column. You swap that as well. So you just define like, okay.
So in a way, you have exactly the same outcome.
Yeah, you can build something same from structure-wise. You can, if you want to modernize your structure and you said like, yeah, I want to use the right column.
But what about if I have a highly customized page layouts? Are those supported in modern?
Not in modern.
But so I can't do a custom page.
Define highly customized. Yeah.
Well, I know obviously answer on this question, but I'm just teasing on the questions.
Yeah.
So let's say that a customer has a customized page layouts where they, for example, expose metadata whenever the page layout is in edit mode, kind of a typical classical way of collecting metadata on base level. Can we do something similar in the modern?
You put at the same metadata columns in your site pages library, and you configure it to show up in the, there's like the web part to show metadata on a page. It will show up always, not in edit mode only. There are some differences over here between the platforms. They're not exactly the same feature set, but you can more or less do whatever what you need in modern as well.
Yeah.
Sections are not locked, so you like if you imagine you had a page layout where you had like a web part embedded in the page layout, so like a fixed web part on all the pages, you couldn't remove it as user. That web part will be translated, so you will end up with a modern equivalent web part on the modern page, but this time the section is not locked, so the user can delete it. So there is, but that's differences in the platform. And again, the modern page platform is evolving as well. Maybe in the future there will be an option to lock sections, and then we are just page transformation to take that into account. But today it is like it is.
Absolutely, and it for sure in general, modern pages and modern pages creation of modern pages, managing them is much more efficient and much easier, and from an end user perspective, much more intuitive as well. So for sure,
absolutely.
Now, on other areas, so we talked about the modern pages and modern pages API being part of the modernization tooling, but that's not precisely the only location where the modern pages pages API does exist, right?
Well, the modern pages API does not exist in the modernization tooling.
Exactly.
It's part of PNP Core SDK.
There is no API.
There's no API. So let's talk about this one. And let's hit those, let's say, difficult discussions as well. So there's a PNP Core SDK, which is the new term, which is for .NET 5. You can use it in .NET Standard or whatever you can implement your stuff on.
That's everywhere.
The whole .NET everywhere. It works everywhere, which is really, really cool. And that has the modern pages API. So you're able to basically create pages, add sections, columns, put a web parts there, manipulate all of that stuff. But that's still in the PNP Core SDK, which is an open source solution. Mm-hmm. So if I'm a customer, what if I have concerns related on open source? So why isn't this part of Craft?
An hour or so. We could tell
you. We need to go, right, Bert?
Yeah, we can tell a history.
Sorry, I'm heading to a tunnel.
Can't hear you.
Can't hear you anymore. In the ideal world, this would be in Graph, like many other things would be in Graph. In the ideal world, there's other things as well, but it's not the ideal world we live in. We live in a world
right now, at least. Yeah.
Resources and by plans and priorities and so on. And then building a modern page API is a fairly complex endeavor that today does not really exist in Graph. Now, that being said, are you blocked? No, because the PNP Core SDK implementation in the end uses supported APIs under the covers. We just read a list item and a page is a list item. So list item with particular columns, and this columns of those fields, they contain the page content. So what does the page API do? It will read that content. It will translate it into an object model for you as a developer to make it easy to add a section, to add a column, to put something in a section, to make it multilingual and so on and so on. But in the end, we just serialize back that data into the list item and say SharePoint system update list item. Save back the list item. So it's reading list item.
Why is it system item? System update? Or is it, anyway? So update, anyway, never mind. Whatever.
Back in 2003, when SharePoint was
no.
Back the item to SharePoint.
Yes. Exactly. But this node package, NuGet package, is open source. So is it then supported, or what's the supportability story?
Well,
you mentioned that the APIs are supported. Yes.
But the source code from PNP Core SDK, from any open source project as such, is not supported. So if you call support and say like, yeah, I'm using this particular method, it doesn't work. If you can pinpoint to the fact that the, for example, saving of the list item breaks, then okay, support will help you. But if it's something else going wrong before, then you have to work with the open source team owning the library, or you can try to fix it yourself. That's open source, so it's free, but it's not there's no support SLA and so on, as you all know. But we do our best as a team to kind of listen to the incoming feedback and to answer quickly. Sometimes that's works. Sometimes you need to wait longer. Kind of depends a bit on the capacity. And the people that are at that point in time online looking at the content, picking up an issue and helping you. I think with open source, for me, the more detailed you can describe your issue or even recommend a fix, the easier it gets for the folks owning the library, owning the open source component to make the fix. If it's generic, like, yeah, it doesn't work. Okay, take some time to figure out it's really broken. If something is broken, often it's not something broken. It's more like a user question. But if you can be more precise, it's good. And for that, actually, there's one thing. We have source link support in all the PNP.NET packages nowadays. So if you just use a PNP.NET package, in Visual Studio, your developer using that, it doesn't work, it breaks. You can just press F11 and dive into our source code without having it pulled down on your system. And you can give a more tailored kind of message in GitHub, like, yeah, this line is breaking, or this particular thing doesn't work, or I get an exception at this point. So it helps you to better understand why it goes wrong. And if it goes wrong, it helps you to also write a more tailored and more to the point issue in GitHub, or even make like a PR. That would be even better. If you create a PR with your fix, then it's and it's really a problem, then merging that, it's like a matter of days typically. But yeah, it's
and it's anyway, of course, it's absolutely 100% better that we rather build this one unified library together with the community as an open source solution, rather than every single company building their own unique thing, which are evolving on different section, because also you, Bert, have a lot of insights related on what happens inside of engineering. So if something happens for the modern pages, we can take that into account in this open source library, which the partner who's building their own couldn't. So that's one of the reasons, of course, why having a one unified open source solution built together with partners is better than having multiple competing ones, for sure.
Absolutely. And as a partner, you can use those open source components in your products. I mentioned in the beginning Quest integrating page transformation. Now, they've taken this approach that their end customers, have to download the latest bits from PNP, from NuGet. Yep. So they have to take a deliberate action to download that and add it to their content matrix installation. And they also clearly spell like, guys, we don't own the source code, so we don't officially support it. If it goes wrong, we'll try to help you, but we are not, it's not like our source code that we can immediately jump in and fix things. So, but they have like a hybrid working model. I think that's a good kind of way forward for this thing where they add the value to the customer, because their customers were demanding like, hey, I want this quest, I need this particular feature. And now they ship it and they enable their customers. But a trade-off that if there is something with page transformation that goes wrong as such, that they will, with their customers, bring it back to the community where we try as a community, try to fix it and get them unblocked.
What about what happens whenever so sooner or later we'll luckily have a native modern pages API in a graph? Mm-hmm. What happens then? Do you need to re-implement your whole functionality? So is it worthwhile to maybe, well, it will certainly not happen within the 6 months, but is it something like, do you want to wait for the graph to have that, or do you use this and do I need to re-implement the whole thing whenever the graph will have the native modern pages API?
Yeah, first of all, waiting for the graph to have this, waiting for something to ship a particular feature, I wouldn't recommend doing that unless you're really sure that the team is shipping the new feature that you need like in next 2-3 months. Great. Then you have if you have a committed timeline, sure. But if it's like if it's still open, waiting buys you nothing. So in this case, for Pages API, why wouldn't you use PNP Core SDK? Because then you get the value right away. Now, if later on Graph ships Page API, and that applies also to other areas, but let's take Page API as an example, then the PNP Core SDK is written in a way that we can under the covers change the API implementation while you as developer, as user of the library, are not impacted. So the PNP Core SDK under the covers uses Graph, uses SharePoint REST, and even some CSOM. But what you get back from API is a set of objects that are not connected to any API anymore.
Yeah.
Like a CSOM works, but you get a CSOM object back. You can only use it with CSOM. This time we have a clear disconnect. You get back PNP Core SDK objects, and how we populate those objects, how we populate the web object or the list object or the item object, is up to the SDK to do that for you, based on what you ask. And if APIs need to change because Microsoft evolves, then we make those changes under the covers, and you should not see any impact for your application. That's the big thing with Core SDK.
So then oversimplifying things, the Core SDK gives us the capability of using features already today, as in addressing the gap, whatever is there. without and if I commit on that, my so I don't need to actually re-implement my stuff because it's the abstraction layer between the underlying APIs. That's actually a really cool thing. So well implemented. Whoever came up with this model? So
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the one of the things. If we think about the BMP as the larger program and initiative, there's multiple kind of efforts what the BMP is running, and a lot of those efforts have originally started based on addressing a gap. I still love the story related on 365 CLI, because Waldeck was an MVP employed by me as a vendor to write developer documentation for SPFX. And then we created the developer documentation related on how do you enable CDN within your tenant. And you needed to use a PowerShell for it. And the PowerShell doesn't work in Mac. So we needed to address the gap. And then, poof. And then there's the CLI for Microsoft 365. So
we should introduce our original name back.
Which one? Oh, the gaps. Yes.
The really first year of the initiative, it was internal only. Because we, Vesson and I were both the consulting services working with clients across the world. And then we.
So actually building real world customer cases.
Real world stuff. Yeah, absolutely. but then, yeah, no, we.
You wrote code.
We built great apps, which was, if you kind of put it together, it's gaps. It was like the hidden message was like, yeah, actually, there's so many gaps, so we have to build something just to be able to build great apps. We have to fix the gaps, kind of. That was the story around.
Yeah.
That wasn't really a marketing ready.
Yeah.
But I guess in a way you could, like, I think that can be said of any dev tooling or an SDK, right? Like it's meant to make things easier, and whether that's a gap or like you can argue about anything that it's a gap, that it should be a part of the product. Well, sure, thinking that way, everything belongs in there. But on the other hand, maybe there is something specific. Maybe some people use it that way, but not everyone, right? So like there's like you draw the line at some point, right? And also like there's, as you say, resources. Like we at Microsoft cannot physically do it. Like we don't scale to do everything for everyone.
Yeah.
Right. So if you think about it, at the end of the day, like who is the best at doing what, and who is the only party who can do things? Like if you think about like who is the only one who can implement things in the cloud? Well, obviously us. Like customers cannot build things in our cloud. Like they cannot change code on servers. Like that is just not an option. But they can build an SDK that has scenarios implemented specifically for them. Well, then they should do that, and then we'll focus on building APIs, providing them with services, intelligence, and insights as the only thing that we can do, right?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Cool. Let's actually jump into articles and talk about those, and we'll come back on talking about the next steps in a second. I will start sharing my screen. So. And last week, obviously, a lot of announcements related on Ignite, and we're going to do recaps of these in community calls and all of that stuff, and what does it actually mean as part of this journey. And these big announcements are always about marketing, more like, awesome. Okay, what does it really mean? That's today-to-day community engagement, what we need to actually explain. So, awesome. Now, related on Microsoft Viva, so a few updates on different Microsoft Viva Learning. It's going to be a public preview in April 2021. Microsoft Viva Connections is starting to go GA in March. This is mainly for Viva Connections desktop, so this month. So it's going to go GA. There's multiple features with Go comes and will be lighting up slightly later, but especially the desktop version will be coming out in March. Which is this month, which is really, really cool. Viva Insights is now in public preview, and then the Viva Topics is the one which is currently available. Related, actually, one thing maybe to mention also is that we also mentioned that, does it say that? No, it doesn't say it in here. Viva Connections will be free as part of the licensing for SharePoint Online. So nobody has to pay any extra related on having the portal then embedded directly in Teams or the mobile experiences and all of that. So it's really cool. And then a lot of these Ignite announcements. So we kind of actually collect all of this in the blog post article. So a lot of other stuff so people can easily access things. I think the new layouts options, really, really awesome. Absolutely brilliant stuff. The live reactions, these are really, really cool as well. And who said it? Somebody said it actually last week. We had the community call on Thursday, and whenever somebody actually clicked that, then there was a massive reaction when people were realizing, oh, I can actually do these reactions. So I can, we can mm-hmm. actually kind of, oh, this is actually cool. I can see them live. So, but they actually do have a lot of value for sure. And getting the meetings more interactive is a really good thing. 1,000 person interactive webinars with the moderation control. Wow. The scale of things. So
scale
really,
is
really
growing
cool.
Growing here.
A lot of great improvements and great enhancements in the Microsoft Teams sites for sure. And devices. Teams panels, we talked about this one last week as well, that maybe the
what
Teams panels
are
cool, but you gotta put them in office. What is an office? Well, the thing where we will go whenever this thingy will go away.
So I should put that panel outside of my door.
Exactly.
Like
exactly. There we go.
Taken now.
Yes.
I'm in there.
Yes. But a lot of awesome enhancements. And obviously, there will be a lot of additional details one step at a time when things are getting more available. Also, for Microsoft Lists, there was a lot of new improvements in here. Here's a cool video from Microsoft Mechanics, where we have Omar Shaheen, our CVP, related on OneDrive, SharePoint, and Lists, as an example, to talk about the improvements in here. So what are the things where we are investing, and what are the really cool things, what you can actually do with this stuff as well. Very, very cool. And there was a lot of improvements and last week, on security and compliance collaboration in Microsoft Teams. So announcement, multi-geo support, safety controls, targeting, disabling attendee video during meetings, actually pretty important thing if needed to have control related on what's actually happening on the other side. Technically, having all of these community calls and everything else are always a potential risks for us when we're doing the videos together with everybody else. New inclusive features in Microsoft Teams and more Ignite 2021 edition. The really cool options related on making things easier, layout control, slides in high contrast if needed, so you can actually automatically nice. Adjust all of that stuff, and a lot of improvements in here as well. So really, really cool. Then we had a new template coming out for the Microsoft Lookbook. So help employees transition to hybrid work using SharePoint site template. Is it a site template? That's a technical term. It is a site template because you're creating a template site based on a template. Now, what is the technology? That's debatable. But really cool new workplace transformation site with an example content inside of it, so you can actually apply this to any tenant in the world by using the SharePoint Lookbook, which is really, really cool. So a lot of good usage on that. Then there was some Shesha money. What's the new security and compliance on Microsoft Ignite 2021? A lot of improvements here as well. So, and a lot of this stuff is across the Microsoft 365, not just about the OneDrive or SharePoint. So more and more, when we implement the features, it's across the board rather than isolated products, which is really, really good as well. What else? SharePoint Roadmap came out the February 2021 edition last Monday as well. We just missed it for the last recording. So what are the latest improvements in here? And there's a good recording and interview with Naomi Moneypenny, who's going to actually do a monthly community call demo tomorrow, Tuesday, depending on when you're watching this video. Is it on Tuesday or not? And so a lot of improvements on SharePoint site related on many functionalities. And what else? We have the what's new in Microsoft 365 and Teams platform. So the updates on that one. So a lot of cool stuff as well. We have what's new in the Excel add-ins developers 2021. Everybody is hitting new articles and new things to talk about in Ignite week. And then on the BMP blog post, so we do have now this new Microsoft 365 BMP, what is it? It's a hub in the tech community.
Yes.
And in here we have five or six new articles, so quickly running through them as well. So Ilya had a really cool article related on how to write a code comments or not, and really thinking, kind of like evaluating those different options, what does it actually mean? So really cool stuff as well. Paul Bullock has a modernization lives in PMP framework. This relates on the discussion what we had with Bert. So how do we actually, what are the modernization tooling, what's where and how does it actually work? What is the old GitHub repo? What is the new? Because there was some recent changes related on that layout as well. Some really cool stuff. Louis Fries had a, should we use SharePoint REST or Microsoft Graph in Power Automate? Have you read this, Waldeck? Putting you on the spot.
Yes, I have.
What is the conclusion?
It depends.
Yes, surprise.
Of course it is. Like, right, so I think TLDR is like, yes, you want to do graph, but in order to call graph, like you need to do an HTTP call, which requires a license in Power Automate, right? Yeah. So like it comes, like, yes, you can do more things with graph across 365, but in order to be able to do that, you need a license. So like it comes with additional cost. In a way.
Yeah. And we still have the option of using SharePoint REST and the kind of a classic option. You can fall back on that. So obviously, we do recommend highly on using Microsoft Graph APIs where possible. So for sure. How to create a Fowkes table in adaptive cards with Power Automate. So basically, how to create this kind of a table, and how do we post that one to the teams or to the discussion. So really cool article as well. Was posting to Teams. Yes, it was. Post adaptive card in a chat or a channel. Yes. Avoid unnecessary looping, apply to each, and Power Automate. Good article from Leon Armstrong related on that one. It's cool to see more and more Power Automate being used widely, which is understandable for sure, because it's super powerful to get access on things. And
it's the powerful basic, automate.
It's powerful. Yeah. Yes. Really cool article from Leon on that one as well. And then we had ETH on how to start new SPFX WebPart project, Microsoft Graph Toolkit and React. So basically, if I'm creating a new project and SPFX projects, how do I actually integrate with Microsoft Graph Toolkit? How do I take advantage of that? How do I create the SharePoint provider, which will then take care of the access tokens and all of that stuff for the Graph Toolkit controls? So relatively simple, but really kind of a pinpointing on the exact things to get started, which is really, really cool. And then we move into the video section. So, and Adam Hometz had a really great video from last week related on introduction of Microsoft Viva Connections. I think this actually touches really big, gives a great overview. What is the Viva Connections? What does it mean? There's no licensing implication. It will be free. How do we extend that? What does it mean for end user? And then also the fact that, okay, so is this just repackaged to the company app, which we announced in Ignite, and all of those questions are being addressed on this video. So it's actually really cool. So it's not just about marketing, but also about, hey, so is this just repositioning what we have, or is this new stuff? And he's addressing all of those. So great video. So Dan Walling had a really great video related on Azure Communication Services. This one was released GA or preview as part of the Ignite announcements, right about there. No, on that one, yes. So Azure Communication Services. So basically,
In preview.
Okay. But basic idea of this one is that you can actually build a solution, or your custom solution can take advantage of chat, SMS, and audio and video, rather than just starting a Teams as such. So you can actually integrate video calling directly within your custom application. And that's actually really, really cool. So super cool stuff. Paolo had a new article, episode 1144, creating Teams Link Unfurling extension for your Teams. What is Link Unfurling? Because I saw this title first, I'm like, what is Link Unfurling? What does it actually mean? But basically, it's enriching of links in the conversation. And I think somewhere in here, we're actually seeing that it's more, let's say, advanced linking, not just the link, rather just adding additional content based on the link as well.
If you paste the link, it will just show some preview and some behavior around the link, gives you more context about what you pasted.
Exactly. Yeah, really cool stuff. And of course, he's pasting in the Asus TechBytes on his demo, so that's good. Then there's a new weekly series. This is really, really cool as well. New weekly series for SPFX, SharePoint Framework for Beginners, Episode 1, and Introduction. And I think later today, as we're recording this on Monday, I think Robert is going to release this, the episode number 2, because this was intended to be a weekly series. So really cool to get recap on how to get started on SPFX, what are the things to consider, how do we implement stuff and all of that stuff. And in general, in the Robert's dev talk, there's actually a good set of videos on multiple other things as well. So really great channel. Will Holland from Treewheel had a really nice summary related on Nicole Herzovich announcements on what are the latest around the Microsoft Teams platform and options and all of that. So kind of a summary on this one. So this blog post kind of runs through the main feature announcements within that video. This one also actually really, really cool from Michael Mallett. Init API permissions for your SPFX projects without deploying them. Okay, so how do I grant API permissions to the SPFX projects when I'm doing testing and debugging without deployment of the SPBKJ file to the app catalog? And this basically is that there's a explicit Azure AD application where we can go and configure the needed permissions, and that then enables you to do debugging directly in the hosted local workbench. So makes sense, but it's good to have a reminder how it works as well. And then Chris O'Brien had a relatively long article related on SharePoint Syntex artificial intelligence tips for choosing between document understanding and form processing models. If you are more into the SharePoint Syntex, I think this will be explaining the different options and how does it actually work.
On that one, on SharePoint Syntex, one thing to mention there is, as well, is that PnP Core SDK will have Syntex support fairly soon. So we enable you to take Syntex models, which is a content understanding model, and then you can take that model and deploy that to libraries, so that the library, when you upload a document to that library, the model is processed and your document, for example, is read, and the metadata is extracted and put into the metadata columns, the scenario that we support with Syntex there. So we enable you with PnP to grammatically do that work, same as running existing content through the models and so on. So the first step is having APIs in PnP Core SDK. Once they're done,
Export and import the configurations. Yes, absolutely.
Once they're done, that will be in PnP Core Shell as well to have give IT admins, IT pros a way to configure and roll out SharePoint Syntex in their tenant.
Absolutely. Really, really cool. And it's good to see more and more focus and investments on the SharePoint Syntex and the Project Cortex outcomes, so to say, because Project Cortex was basically two things. It was SharePoint Syntex and then the Viva Topics. And note that the Viva Topics and SharePoint Syntex are now out, and those are getting evolved as an individual features and capabilities as well. And getting more support for them makes a lot of sense. Now, Ignite is done. Dev Kitchen is done for Viva Connections. We've done that one. What's happening this week? I know what I need to do at least, but
sleep
this week.
No, yeah.
I have a day off on Friday. If that can be interesting,
really?
But no.
Really? I should have a day off as well.
No, but this week, think actually can be a big week for us because if everything goes well, we plan to release both PnP Core SDK V1 as a next official release from PnP Framework and PnP PowerShell.
Yeah.
So nice. If everything goes well, by the end of the week, we'll have all of them released.
Woo-hoo.
Which took us a while. That's been almost a year of journey to get to this point with PnP Core SDK.
Yeah.
So it's a step-by-step approach, but it enables us to gradually replace things, improve things, without impacting people, the community using our components.
Yeah.
So that's why it takes a bit of time. But on the other end, seamless for you.
And I guess also another thing is it just scale, right? It's not like you start with a new SDK that does only allows you to retrieve an update title of a web. It does many things already. So it's big. And then in parallel, you maintained the other thing that was already available too. So you kind of, for all this time, split yourself in two, like trying to support everything you can in the old stuff, but then also bring up this new stuff to par, right? So I think it only makes it clear to folks like how much effort there goes into that. Like once you get involved into something at scale, it's like, it's not just like, let's change it. Let's fix it.
You can't break your existing customers. You need to do backward compatibility on it. And then the classic story related, not a problem. You get 10 people of volunteering on helping you, which is like, but that actually makes situation kind of worse for momentarily, which is an interesting challenge as well.
Right? Yeah,
of course, in a long term, you can catch that. Yeah. But managing things, coordination, everything else, the overhead, it's a really interesting challenge for sure.
Maybe in the beginning, but now I think, like Oleg mentioned, I think we are now at the point where we can definitely use more contributors. We've written how to extend PNP Cross DK. We've learned from the mistakes on the past. So the PNP site score was organically grown over 6-7 years. documentation was, you search on the internet and you might find a blog article, and there's many of them, but you have to hunt for documentation. Now with PNP Cross DK, it's well coded, well documented, well tested, and we with just a way higher quality bar for any submission as well. But I think that's really good because we want to build something which is stable and can evolve for the next 10 years. So it's like a big kind of uplift of what we had to be ready for the future again.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So that's the big news for BERT for this week. Hopefully crossing fingers that everything goes fine. What about you, Waldeck? Anything interesting happening on your side?
Last week, I spent a whole week trying to figure out like how do you build a bot with Bot Composer, which is a kind of interesting tool. Like, so I've never built a bot in the past. So that is like a low code, but it's not the Power Platform-y way of building bot. It's more advanced. So it's kind of in the middle, and it allows you like to basically set the first step to build a bot, basically to experience like what a bot is, how it works, and then kind of inspire you to do more, right? So I spent a whole week on that. I learned tons of stuff. So now it's kind of, okay, there are things that I learned that needs to go back to product groups. There are things that needs to be changed in the docs. There are things that kind of don't fit like in either both. So like maybe there will be a blog post or video or something. So like trying to like sort out all of that from the past week. And then other than that, it's going back to work and picking up work on learn modules that work on a foregraph.
Nice. Makes perfect sense.
Quite busy then.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Every week.
Every single week. And on our side, we're looking into releasing SharePoint Framework 1.12 this week. So unless there's any last minute thingies, and then we need to get it out. We have 1.13 coming really soon after this one as well. There's a dependencies related on previews for Viva connections, and we need to get 1.13 out and all of that stuff. So this is it's really a cycle, and release management is really, really hard, but we'll get there, because obviously we don't want to actually release 1.12 and then release 1.12.1 immediately right after, because that doesn't make any sense. So,
and you also don't want to ship 1.13 and 1.12 after that.
Exactly. Of course not.
Let's ship 1.14 then.
Exactly.
Keep up with the tradition.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So skipping the 13. I think we're planning to release the 13. So. But again, I live in house number 13, so
I used to play volleyball with number 13.
Everything, right?
I
used to always play volleyball with number 13. It was my number. So
yeah, never got.
And I never broke anything. I never got really hurt. So something bad happened. So
Anyway, I think that's it for this week's recording. So thank you everybody for watching. We'll be back with the latest and the news BNP Weekly in a week. So,
thanks for having me, guys.
thanks for joining us, Bert. Awesome to have a chat with you. Thank you. We'll be in touch. Cheers. Bye-bye.